King's Sword, Kingdom's Own, written by Pentapus, read by
C. Welsh as Flinden Harris,
Minna Bird reading Raoul of Golden Lake,
Ocean Tale as Young Man,
Akiko Tree as Jonathan of Conte,
Rena Jenkins as Alana,
Jadira as Termas,
Black Glass as Thayette,
Jitania as Gary,
God of Laundry Baskets as Healer,
Eljabel, reading George Cooper,
Lord Palimp by Yoenna,
and Raven as the narrator. Also featuring TWTD as the unnamed spy and Mistborn Hero as the unnamed courtier. The lower city housed the loudest public houses in Chorus. The whole neighborhood was tilted, sloping away from the distant palace on the hill toward the river docks. The deeper a traveler descended, the closer the streets crowded together, packed with a mix of locals, sailors, travelers, thieves, and the occasional silk-clad rich men from the upper city. On the upper city end of South Street, a thoroughway so narrow the hanging signs on either side appeared to be jousting, there was an establishment known as the Lion and the Dove, which had been taken over by an unusual collection of patrons, all of them well-dressed, nary a rip or patch to be seen. Half wore the robes of the bazir, half the more traditional tunic and breeches, all in a dashing color scheme of blue, silver, white, the uniform of the King's Own. An older man in matching colors ducked through the building's slightly off-kilter door, his face going through an interesting mix of contortions as he saw the group arrayed across the common room. Many of the rowdy tables quieted in his presence. The bazir, though they recognized the newcomer, were less steeped in the culture of Tortall's capital and carried on. The older man, whose name was Flinden Harris, made his way to a shadowed table in the back, not so crowded as the others. A tall bazir, with a tendency to trace a thumb across his own sharp cheekbone, watched patiently. He sat with three pale northerners, the first young, the second older and wearing marks of rank. The third northerner was the reason for the extra space at the table. Stretched out, his long legs kicked up on a nearby chair, he took up the space of three men. He smiled up at the new arrival. His eyes, now crinkled in welcome, were dark like a bazir, and the gold marks of commander glinted on his uniform. Conversation died away.
"Good gods,"
Harris said, his lips pressed tightly together, the only white on his face.
"I thought they were joking."
The commander, whose name was Raoul of Golden Lake, gave him a false smile.
"About what, Flinden?"
"You are a symbol of the realm."
Harris flung out a hand at the mass of royal blue and silver at the common backdrop.
"Conduct yourself accordingly."
The young man at the table, who had barely been with the own longer than the coronation rebellion, muttered under his breath.
"Trust me, my lord. There's no way to field the symbols like a few shots of this piss."
"This,"
Raoul mimicked Harissa's gesture,
"is the natural outcome of too many days spent reading about supply line logistics. I'm preserving my health of mind."
"Of all the ridiculous."
He yanked out a chair. Just in time, Raoul removed his boots.
"That's the spirit."
Thoughtfully, Raoul shoved his tankard across the table. Zerhud laughed, tapping his fingers against his cheek.
"God help us."
Harris muttered and drank. Raoul stood among the trees of the royal forest. An hour's ride into the wood, the forest opened into a clearing on a ridge above a stream, sunlight slanting into the green dimness. The ground here was even and well-packed, an old haunt. He held a bare oak branch in one hand and an uncommon frown of concentration on his face. With the branch, he moved through the familiar motions of the sword. His arm cut through the air with grace. His leg hesitated. The scar pulled at him, not badly, just enough to remember. Not long ago, he had not been able to stand at all. Lucky bastard to have healed so well, he thought. Lucky. He remembered Duke Baird's gray face, the exhaustion of all the healers in the days, weeks after Roger's failed rebellion. Maybe had there not been such casualties, had they not been so tired, but that was a more meaningless might have been than most. At what other time than war would he find himself with a sword slash the length of his thigh? Still, the leg had healed now, set in stone, recorded in the books of the gods. What could a healer do with a wound that had no wound left in it? Raoul stepped forward, slashing out his fanciful sword. He would push himself, his leg, as much as he could take and make do. He'd rejoin the lists and make a few points about the strength of Jonathan's vassals, even if he had to strap himself to the saddle. He didn't think it had come to that. From the north, the sound of a sure-footed horse making its way along the trail. Horse and rider moved through the trees like a shadow. One black and the other dressed in black, trimmed in silver. Jonathan had found him. A storybook vision, as always.
Ho-ho! What glory do I see in yonder wood?
Raoul called, mocking. In the light, the kingly vision broke apart somewhat. John gave him a smile that was barely more than a twitch of one side of his mouth. It was sincere despite that. Weariness showed in his body as he dismounted. Darkness dropped his head to nibble at the brush.
I decided I was envious of your daily escapes.
The oak branch rested obviously in Raoul's hand, a garish standard Raoul couldn't decide if he wanted to conceal. Instead, he propped a foot nonchalantly on a fallen log, leaning forward with an elbow on his knee. He made his own storybook image, only huger, filthier, and ouch, that pulled.
My failed escapes. I seem to end up in the same bed each night, no matter how many times I try to flee.
John rubbed a hand over his face, smile turning wry.
I've been hearing about your, carousing.
If you lived a quieter life, I wouldn't have to boost the morale so much.
Raoul stepped down from the log, walking away like he wasn't trying to work the tightness out of his thigh.
Raoul.
Raoul turned. The king's face was fond.
I mean no censure. Come back with me. I have 2 cases of port from Tuzaine. I need my own carousing.
Your own has been carousing quite successfully.
John rolled his eyes. He took in the clearing with a frown. There was no second horse.
Raoul, did you walk?
Huh?
Raoul said carelessly, about as casual as iron. John watched him, all his focus brought to bear, suddenly paying attention.
I suppose I did walk.
Ah.
John wisely let it drop.
Well, I can walk darkness back.
It'll take a while.
Oh, don't worry. There are many, many things I can pour into your ears to pass the time.
Raoul tossed the oak branch into the underbrush, making a face. Darkness's ears swiveled toward the sound, as alert as any hound.
Don't keep your vassal wondering what joy is in his future, my beloved liege.
Tariffs.
Jonathan said, face comically blank.
The joy of internal tariffs and the lords of the realm who want to enforce them without my permission.
They walked back through the woods, surrounded by the rustle of leaves and the call of birds, devoid of human company. Darkness's heavy footfalls sounded behind them. It was a calmness, Raoul felt, that was tragically wasted by talk of politics. To John, though, the human emptiness was a dam set loose. Without an audience, he no longer had to treat his every word like a force to be directed or restrained. Raoul had not wanted to be this to Jonathan, his tedious political confidant, but he could bear the burden of an hour of unchecked irritation at economic regulations every now and then. Jonathan's speech slowed, fell into silence. Raoul lifted his eyebrows. The king looked away, sighing.
Of course, I could just smash them into obedience with the Dominion Jewel and really get the Civil War started.
Raoul said nothing. His was not a political mind. Instead, his whole body, his mind and heart resonated with one song. Send me. Let him go and take Jonathan's rule where his careful words in chorus could not. Let him do something to right the realm. For God's sakes, let Jonathan not need his bodyguard here so very desperately. All of this was wishful thinking. Still, he said carefully,
I could do with another jaunt.
John laughed. He'd heard nothing under the casual tone, forgivable as he was bent to the task of piecing together a kingdom. The exhaustion showed down to his bones, that fundamental framework more apparent in his wrists and sharp rise of his cheekbones than it had been since he was a boy growing into his height.
If only I could.
John said regretfully.
I need you here. There's no other sword I can trust at my back.
John looked to him for a shared thought at the known wandering nature of the lioness and her rogue. But Raoul looked away. That was the trouble, wasn't it? He'd agreed to the cage himself. Raoul woke with the sun bright at the upper corner of the window, a slow awakening that he could have done without. His poor, ravaged quarters in the north wing of the royal palace had faced west, and generally had been much better for hangovers. He had a headache and a nasty taste on the tongue, and always the chilly ache in his thigh. Springtime does not become me, he thought. The birds were making a racket outside the window. With a great mocking sigh, he heaved himself up, squinty-eyed, and froze, one hand jerking towards the sheathed longsword propped against the wall. A small figure bundled in the desert robes of the Bazir was lounging quietly in the oak chair at his bedside, ankles crossed beside a stack of papers on the floor. She did not react to the lunge for his weapon except to push her hood back from her face. She was sun-tanned and freckled, plain but for her shock of red hair, streaked with blonde now, and her eyes, which shone a deep purple in the warm early light.
Golden Lake?
She greeted him.
You lazy oaf, I've been here half the day already.
Raoul gave a delighted shout. He regretted it immediately, a hand to his head.
Alana! Gods, my head. How long have you been back?
Not long.
She gave her dusty clothing a wry glance.
We broke camp before dawn and rode the rest of the way in the early morning.
He reached out and gripped her arm. The distance from the bed to the chair was nothing to him.
Your road was safe?
Yes, but elsewhere?
A Tyrian caravan was taken on Tuesday just across the border, on the road to Chorus, no less. The usual highwaymen or rebellion remnants is anybody's guess.
Goddess.
They sat for a second and looked at each other, familiar faces so long apart. Alana scrubbed at her face tiredly. Old sunburn had begun to peel on her cheeks.
Your desert solarium has done you good, but...
Raoul staggered upright.
Excuse me? I have to vomit.
Alana trailed him down the hall idly. She had a rolled paper in her hand, one she picked up from his own floor, studying it as she walked. The king's own had a long tradition of concern for luxury. As its commander, Raoul lived in the palace proper while they sorted out the destruction Roger of Conte left behind. This wing had only a few cracks in its plastered walls, and not a single fallen roof. It meant, more practically, that Raoul didn't have to limp so far as an outdoor privy. He straightened, wiping his mouth. The light outside the window was too bright, and nausea left him shaky.
A hell of a time to show up.
Alana said nothing, crouched on the bare stone in the hall, limber as a young boy, a sharp, interested expression on her face, and the paper she picked up curled in one hand. She was looking at his leg. at the scar that cut a pale line across his thigh and down behind the knee. Quickly, the expression turned to recognition and guilt.
I'm sorry. I could have...
You killed the viper. It's not your fault you had to do it twice.
No, true, but the man who brought the evil mage back to life had been Alana's own twin. Alana's head dipped, eyes shut. Raoul sighed, leaning heavily against the doorframe.
Alan...
How goes the own?
She said, subdued. Raoul stopped.
It is what it is.
He said, and could go no further. He reached for the swell of pride he felt little more than a year ago, when Jonathan, already bearing the dignity of the throne, had called him in to tell him of his appointment. He felt nothing. The feeling had faded with time. It was easier now to remember the cold fear that had pervaded every aspect of those first few months of Jonathan's reign. The people Jonathan could trust had been reduced to his innermost circle, those boys in whose company he had grown to knighthood. Despite his youth, and in the case of the own, his lack of impressive titles, Raoul had quite possibly been the only name on the list.
The own protects the king,
Alana said by rote. Raoul sighed. He stared at his open palm, curling the fingers one by one.
The own is a road to court for second sons and impoverished nobles. They haven't left the capital in 30 years except as pretty bodyguards to traveling royalty. Not since the old king.
He clenched his fist.
For the political games Jonathan plays, perhaps they're worth the money they spend on pretty uniforms, but they're dandies and power seekers, and they do nothing.
Alana blinked at him, poleaxed. He was glowering. Raoul realized. Jean's Saren princess had called the expression thunderous. Had he frowned so much as a boy? His mother had claimed he didn't know how. Jean had said as much once. A crash interrupted them, thunderous and jarring. Alana leapt to her feet, whirling, her burnous flaring out. Underneath, she wore a dusty tunic in the color of rust. It might once have been red, and across her chest an applique of a rearing, maneless lion. Startled out of melancholy, Raoul grinned.
Don't worry, Linus. It's just the palace falling apart.
Alana came outside at full stride, boots hard against the cold ground. They were surrounded by the sound of tools against stone and the shouts of working men. Mist hung over the grounds, though the sun would chase it off by noon.
Welcome back to daily life at the Palace of the Conte Kings.
Following her at a more stilted pace. He'd wished he'd put on a thicker overshirt. The cold moved through his wool shirt as though it wasn't there. Alana simply wrapped her robes around herself. With her hood over her hair, she became instantly anonymous. Raoul was not so lucky. His height, his curly hair, and now... Oh, irony. The cursed limp were a beacon to anyone with eyes.
Every morning?
Alana tilted her head toward the working crew.
Them or the sun?
He curved his arms and clenched his fists, mimicking a wrestling match with some invisible, mountainous opponent.
Makes me feel active.
Alana snorted, the rest of her expression hidden by a thin scarf attached to her burnous.
My lord, Golden Lake.
The east wing stood behind them, battered but whole. Raoul's dreaded sunrise window was there with the rest, reflecting the orange sun. Across the pitted and cracked courtyard, the core of the ancient building had not been so lucky. Whole swaths of its white stone facade were missing. A dark crack that ran from roof to ground bisected the once grand entrance. The windows on either side no longer lined up. Stopping to look at it for the first time since her return, Alana said,
God, I'd forgotten it was so bad.
You must have come in at the very break of dawn.
Yes, it was too dark to see any of this.
Raoul looked back toward the workers. The man who'd been bellowing was picking his way towards them, hop-skipping through stony debris. He would have been called large in any company other than Raoul's.
Progress has been made, but John insisted the palace be last.
Alana's frown turned inward.
I shouldn't have left.
What are you now, Linus? A builder?
At least you've been here. You can be useful.
Raoul laughed out loud.
Now that is something I have little danger of becoming.
Alana looked at him sharply. Her purple eyes were all that he could see of her face.
My Lord Goldenlake,
the crew chief said, stopping a few yards short and cutting a brief bow. His eyes passed over Alana entirely. Raoul was known to be surrounded by Bazir.
Hello, Termas.
Raoul greeted him in a friendly way, though he only knew the builder through Gary and by the sound of his work crew chipping away outside Raoul's window. Termas, incensed, shook a large knuckled hand back the way he'd come. Raoul and Alana turned obligingly. One of the work crew was more slender than the others, her tunic and breeches baggier and cinched more narrowly at the waist than her fellows. She'd stopped to gaze up at the palace, fingers worrying at some small bit of debris she'd found on the ground. The morning light warmed the flawless cream of her complexion and added an auburn highlight to her raven hair.
We cannot get rid of her,
Termas pleaded.
When she's crushed by a gargoyle the size of a horse, it will be me who's to be hanged in the square for a fool.
Alana laughed. Termas started. He had not expected her to be a woman. Raoul pursed his lips, making a show of considering. Across the ruined courtyard, Jonathan's bride-to-be had turned, watching them with a wary curiosity. Her reservation meant she too hadn't realized which Bazir he was traveling with. Raoul would gladly be party to this reunion. He liked Thayet, but it was Alana who traveled with her, fought with her, knew her. Alana snorted and started to pick her own way through the rocky mass. It was Raoul's turn to trail behind. As she approached, she threw back the hood and let the warm light catch her hair. Thayet shouted, face clearing, and leapt forward to pull Alana into a tight hug. Alana gripped back, clearly pleased.
You're back! Now you can tell us what news it is Jonathan has been keeping from us. And gods, I hope it gives us an excuse to throw a real party.
Raoul shot a glance at Alana, surprised. She was biting her lip, and her red cheeks were probably not just from the chill in the air.
Oh, it's not the sort of thing that lends itself to a party,
Alana said airily.
I'm just marrying George.
Raoul blinked, startled to find that time moved forward for other people. Thayet, too late, clapped a hand over her shriek of delight. Alana tried and failed to roll her eyes. Belatedly, Raoul thumped her on the back so hard she stumbled forward.
At least dinner tonight will be a little lively, finally. You'll have to announce it. Or I will. Or George. I wonder what the etiquette is here.
Etiquette? I thought you'd grown tired of affairs of state.
I can make exceptions for this. God, it's the dreary dumps around here.
For a moment, Thayet's demeanor changed, back to the somber contemplation they'd found her in. She opened her hand, shaking a small handful of fragmented marble, as though she might find something salvageable. A silence sunk over them like a fog. After a moment, Alana spoke awkwardly.
Well, it wouldn't be much of a celebration tonight. George and I parted ways more than 3 weeks ago at Persepolis. John had an assignment for him.
The Tyrian caravan?
East, to Tyrogen.
If there were holdovers from the Coronation Rebellion, they would be there. Of the two, Tyrogen would be the more dangerous. But George was not someone a person worried about, unless that person were Alana.
Where is His Majesty?
Thayet let her handful of broken marble fall to the grass.
Where is he ever these days? Sitting in the rubble of the Hall of Crowns, scheming. Oh, drat. I forgot.
What?
Alana said, eyeing the clusters of people ahead mingling on a raised pavilion.
With the palace the way it is, court has moved outdoors.
Raoul said, eyeing the courtiers with a certain aversion. The crowd was thin due to the hour, but they were each of them finely dressed. Out of place against the backdrop of destruction the Mad Duke had wreaked. They reminded him too well of the old guard of the king's own, and he thought of them waiting in the own's sumptuously appointed sitting room in the east wing, expecting him to appear in a few hours' time and discuss politics.
What? Is John not here?
Thiet stood on her toes through the gaps in the mingling courtiers. The king's chair stood empty.
It is early,
Alana said.
His Majesty would give up sleep if he could find a way. If you don't have the political pull to meet with him privately, you'd best be going to bed early.
A new voice behind them. A thin, angular man was approaching from the palace, a full sheaf of papers under one arm and flanked by two men in the familiar colors of the king's own. His angles made him look older than he was, but in truth, Gareth, the younger of Naxxin, was of an age with his guards. The members of the own nodded to Raoul. One of them looked more put out than the other. Gary had given him several more sheafs of paper to carry, equally stuffed as the one Gary had under his own arm.
Hello, Alana,
Gary said without a hint of surprise. He had always been an incurable gossip, and the talent had sharpened into skill as he grew up.
Hello, Gary.
Princess!
From the direction of the court, they'd been spotted.
I don't know why they want to talk to me,
Thiet muttered.
I'm not even married to John yet.
Close enough,
Gary said seriously.
Do me the favor of mingling, Your Highness.
What, dressed like this?
Thiet laughed, spreading her arms in her drab and filthy work gear.
Change if you like, but as a gift to me and to Jonathan, be there. I'll take the two social failures with me.
Gary opened his mouth as though he might say more, but instead shot them a look, out of character for its seriousness. Raoul narrowed his eyes. Alana, newly returned and oblivious to Gary's professional tells, was laughing at Thiet's sour expression. But even Thiet had spent more time with Alana's old friends than Alana of late, and after a moment she dipped her head in surrender. Alana hesitated, twigging on to the odd note in the air. Raoul touched her shoulder. His hand looked like a bear paw on her small frame. Gary nodded.
This way, then?
And shuffled them back through a dim doorway of heavy oak into the surviving rooms of the palace.
You've heard about the caravan?
He threw the question over his shoulder, walking at a pace just below a trot.
Yes,
Raoul said. The rider had come in exhausted early Friday evening, just as the lantern lighters had begun making their rounds. Within a day, everyone knew, the roads were not safe. Jonathan's reign remained uncontested, but Raoul could not shake the feeling of the country divided in different shadows of power, waiting to see what Jonathan would do, if he could clear the roads, secure trade.
Do you know who it was?
Alana matched Gary's stride with a sword fighter's grace, steps quick and feather light. Raoul let them pull ahead, feeling like a heavy tree swaying this way and that before it decided which way to topple.
Admittedly, my expertise is more administrative, but in the absence of your father, or the new and enigmatic Baron of the Swoop, I will say highwayman.
Gary paused in the hallway, stepping back to study the wooden paneling between two grand tapestries that hung almost to the floor.
Highwaymen, with ranks likely thickened by those men-at-arms and mercenaries we put out of a job last year. Alana, don't make that face. You earned your right to rest in every way imaginable. If I'd been to the roof of the world and back again, I wouldn't have come back from the desert.
Alana threw up her hands and turned away, but Raoul could see her expression of regret did not change. She had a blunt pragmatism and the stubbornness of a bull. To her, the facts were simple. She could have helped. She had not been there. And in a way, it was true. They had made do without her, but Raoul would never tell her how grateful he would have been to have had her with them in that mess of a year.
The lords of the realm are helping to clear the roads, but they want to charge tariffs in exchange. And they're not waiting for permission. Thank the gods the troubles aren't impacting the ships that go through our ports. Overland trade is a different matter. Ugh, let's not discuss it. Ah, here we are.
He stepped forward and, lifting the edge of the heavy tapestry, disappeared with the faint click of a lock. Alana and Raoul followed him into a narrow, dusty space, lit inadequately through faint cracks in the mortar of the rooms they passed. Raoul thought to look for an oil lamp, but Alana raised her hand, mage light blooming around her spread fingers, a violet glow that grew to a warm, colorless light. The light reflected off Gary's face, watching them seriously, his papers forgotten. The guardsmen entered and shut the door of the secret passage behind them.
Your timing is good, aside from getting here a day earlier, or perhaps a year. The king collapsed early this morning.
Raoul went cold. Visions of disaster, of those shadowing powers waiting, flashed past. It felt like every muscle went tight, ready to rend and tear and protect, and he had a grab at the beam in the wall because his traitorous leg suddenly couldn't hold him.
Not an attack.
Gods, why? What happened?
Exhaustion, probably. Duke Bird is with him.
Exhaustion!
Alana said, enraged, like this too was something she could have fended off with a sword. To Raoul, the news was only shocking in how it wasn't. All the muscles coiled to readiness softened. He closed his eyes, let out a quiet...
Damn, does Syed know?
For some reason, we thought we'd keep it a bit harsh. Ho-hum and so forth.
Raoul realized abruptly that Gary was concealing an irritation akin to fury, and had been the entire time they'd been speaking.
I should have been told.
I'm telling you now.
Damn it, Naxon!
Where's his room?
Gary lifted a hand.
Uh-uh. No one will be seeing him until he has woken up naturally. Preferably sometime tomorrow. Still, he'll likely be awake this evening. And ornery. At which point, Alana, your expertise would be most appreciated.
She eyed him.
In orneriness.
My orneriness is a much too easygoing breed for His Majesty. Also, far too familiar.
Who's with him?
Raoul managed more calmly.
Whiteford, Brightly, and even Zurhood.
Gary gave him an arch look.
Unless you disapprove?
Gary, I'm a healer. I want to see him.
I'll take you. I know where he is.
Gary spread his hands, palm up, in acquiescence. Raoul ran his hands up and down the cane, tracing the silver hounds that formed the curved handle. It was easier than pacing. He sank farther back against the richly upholstered settee. He knew every hall and passageway in the palace. He knew more secret doors and crannies than Gary. Some he'd found himself when he set out to survey what would become his domain. He knew the number of able-bodied men he had at his disposal, and where and when they patrolled the grounds. He had maps and lists kept under careful lock and key and oral reports each week on the progress of the construction. None of these things would protect Jonathan from himself.
How long will he sleep, do you think?
Gary glanced up from the papers he spread across the sitting room's heavy mahogany table.
Likely longer than it will take Thayet to escape the socialites, unfortunately.
Lunch had come and gone. Noon sun shone through the taller windows of the palace's upper story onto the room's dark furnishings. The walls were panels of carved oak, hunting scenes and snarling cats. These were the king's rooms, the decor lavish but old. In a year of residence, Jonathan hadn't left a visible mark. The door to the inner rooms opened. Alana entered, her traveling robes discarded, though she had not changed out of her faded tunic. She perched on the edge of the settee, restless against Raoul's slouch. He was still taller.
Exhaustion. How did this happen?
Everyone is working hard. John didn't stand out.
We were also expecting him to understand he needed to sleep.
Raoul said, letting out a laugh that turned into a groan.
How bad is it? I mean, the kingdom.
Gary waved a hand.
We're reasonably confident that Jonathan's reign will continue to be Jonathan's reign, which we weren't sure of not too long ago. Things are just a bit messy.
Messy.
I'm open to alternate descriptions.
I wouldn't know anything about it. My business ends outside of the palace.
He spread his arms, a sharp, violent motion.
This is my realm.
Gary ignored that, With a bare shift of his head, his attention swung to Alana, like a door decisively shut. Raoul dropped his hands back to the head of the cane with a crack.
We need to assert ourselves. No single move is going to make our roads safe, but we need to appear to bring our forces to bear. We need someone experienced with travel, a warrior respected widely, an acknowledged hero, you might say, to deal with the bandits who are making a career out of disrupting our trade.
Raoul dipped his head, his hands closed around the staff of the cane between his knees, overcome with a sudden, desperate need. For all the work it took to keep the own as the formidable shield Jonathan needed, Raoul could not shake the feeling of creeping stagnation. He was doing nothing. Gary aimed his plea at Alana, but it pulled at Raoul's soul. And that was no surprise, since the plan Gary was outlining had not been Gary's idea.
Traveling with who?
Alana said, businesslike, oblivious.
We dissemble a group of irregulars from the army. Give you a small mobile company. Probably light cavalry. A few knights.
The own could do it.
Alana gave him a baffled look. Gary said nothing.
The own are the... They're the king's own guard.
Alana said, looking to Gary for confirmation.
Do they leave the capital?
No.
They damn well should. You're sitting there telling me we need a mobile military unit, separate from the army, that can move about the kingdom easily with short notice? That's the own. The own, if it weren't a stagnant gem around Jonathan's neck, there for him to dazzle the vultures of the court.
That is hardly the extent.
Gary turned abruptly away.
I can't give you this. Talk to Jonathan.
But you're with him on this.
The king's own protect the king.
Gary did not look up, words unyielding as iron. More quietly, he added.
And he needs it.
Raoul could not give a response. The inner door opened. A corporal of the king's own held it open to admit a man in healer's robes.
My lords, my lady,
the healer said.
The king is awake.
The heavy velvet curtains had been shut in the large bedchamber, but the fire burning in the hearth chased away some of the dark, as did the mage light lamps arranged at the side of the canopied bed. Raoul nodded to his captains, standing shadowed in the corners. Duke Baird sat in an armchair by the fire, his expression rueful. The king was in bed, lying against silk pillows, bed covers folded back to his waist and dressed impeccably in a cobalt nightshirt, embroidered in gold at the cuffs and collar. It was a poor choice, underscoring John's paleness.
Hello,
John said quietly, more boyish than he'd been in years. He gave a wan smile.
How much trouble am I in?
He made a fetching hero king, his eyes noticeably blue even in the firelight. It unnerved Raoul sometimes to realize that John knew how to use that. Raoul knew his own answering grin was soft and a little stupidly fond, no matter what incomprehensible political creature his king had grown into. John frowned, gaze dropping as Raoul approached.
Still the limp. Alana is back.
Please, no encouragement. She's already been sniffing at it like a dog after a bone.
Raoul hooked a chair with his foot, pulled it close to John's bedside. John looked away at nothing, turning inward and somber.
I need you whole.
He said, almost to himself. He shifted, trying to pull himself straighter. Raoul grabbed him under his arms and lifted him easily, though John was not light. The hard months of work had made him lean. But he was heavy with muscle and broad. John settled upright against the pillows, face tight with frustration.
John! I almost lost the damn leg. Let me enjoy a few months of lurching around. If you're feeling kind, for a little while don't make any enemies. I can't defeat a horse.
John smiled.
You command an elite cavalry unit. That shouldn't be hard.
Elite my ass! The own is still a road to court for status-seeking fops.
John paused. It was something Alana did, taking the time to focus all of her thoughts on one thing. They were, the both of them, possessed of the same kind of methodical intellect that would not be satisfied until all obstacles had been overcome. Raoul could see it on Jean's face, the careful construction of the conversation he had missed in the sitting room. Jonathan straightened, shoulders stiffening and chin lifting. Like a picture flipped, he discarded his youth for all the dignity of a king.
Change it, then.
Raoul turned away, all his frustration bundled up beneath his teeth.
You know, I remember liking you once.
The traditions of court are a clockwork monstrosity.
John spoke over him, softly regal.
And they are slow to change. The Coronation Rebellion has given us an impetus that we shouldn't waste. Make the King's Own a tool I can use.
A very, very long time ago. It seems longer every day.
Raoul finished grimly. John looked at him. His eyes were still bruised and tired, but he looked better, sharper than he had in weeks. Raoul should have noticed.
Don't give me that, you political fiend. I'll give you your fine warriors, your deadly shield, and I'll leave you Captain Harris and his ambitious aristocrats to bejewel your royal table.
You'll have to work with them.
Get along.
John stared in disbelief.
Taking half your men to carouse in the lower city is not...
So you and I both learned things from Cooper we shouldn't have.
You want more than that.
John, the own, you chose the wrong man. I would give my life to keep you safe, but I cannot stay trapped here watching your back while your kingdom needs rebuilding.
I've heard about your plans.
Gary can't keep his mouth shut.
Gary is a gossip, and that serves me well.
Raoul said nothing.
Your plan is good, very good.
John threw up a hand.
But I didn't know you were such a planner. We'll do it.
I heard what you'll do. I had to listen to Gary wooing Alana with it without even a glance.
It cannot be the own.
John.
John gave him a look with all the weight of the throne behind it.
The own stay in the capital, Golden Lake, and you stay with them.
He visibly sagged, setting loose some of the vulnerability Raoul had seen when he first entered. He met Raoul's eyes, an honest manipulator.
I need you here.
Raoul could not meet that gaze. He shoved violently to his feet, pushing past Alana standing outside in the sitting room. He left to wreak havoc on his officers. He didn't see Alana for several days. Maybe she had been swept up in all there was to do, or perhaps she knew now that her old friends were not above using her as a pawn in the political games they played with each other. In the morning, Raoul threw himself into the work of running the own. In the evenings, he rode out into the forest that stretched out to the south of the palace. His leg was stronger than it had been, and best in the afternoons when the stiffness had faded after a day of activity. It was still an unforgivable disability to the man who had been one of the ablest knights in Tortall. Gary had his expertise on commerce. John had his towering political intellect. Alana, her gift and her destiny. Raoul did not know what he had if he could not fight. What was more laughable than a giant on a desk? Would he slay John's enemies with an inkwell? He had not expected to find answers in paperwork. That was supposed to be his doom, his undoing. The day-to-day duties of commanding the own were enormous, all-encompassing and the most tedious task that Raoul had ever undertaken. Each day he struggled not to throw up his hands and give the whole day over to riding, but when he stepped back and looked at it in weeks, not days, Raoul couldn't tear himself away. More than that, he couldn't stop the plans. The own was one company still, but for as long as Raoul had been in command, it had been slowly dividing. The unofficial gray space between the two as the gap between those he thought were useful in a fight and those who looked good in a uniform at a courtly ball. He would need to form an official second company soon and to decide if that division was also a division in purpose. It was there that he always stopped himself, pulled up short by the boundaries John had drawn for him. Raoul could spend all year building up the own better, faster, more mobile, more organized, bigger. But as a unit whose existence was that of the king's bodyguard, he didn't strictly need a second company, or a third. Even if John went on to have a half a dozen children, Raoul sighed. He liked the Bazir. They only asked him to ride well and work hard. There was a knock at the door.
Come in.
Alana entered. She wore tunic, shirt, and hose, far finer than she would have carried with her on the road. A pair of amethyst drops hung from her ears, bright against her hair, hanging free to her shoulders. No doubt Jonathan or Gary had corralled her into making appearances at court. She also carried a leather-bound, gilt-edged book, the size of her own torso, with apparent ease. A flattened dewdrop crystal as big as her fist rested on top of the book's cover.
Goddess, save me from politics!
Can't be done. Even when I don't attend a single court function, I'm still mired in it.
Alana's attention had already wandered, as if the massive book weren't a big enough clue that she'd come with a purpose in mind.
Do you need that thing?
Raoul turned. She had her eyes on the silver-handled cane propped against the end of his bed.
Not anymore.
I'm going to look at it, if that's all right with you.
Her shoulders tightened involuntarily.
The cane?
He joked, transparent.
Don't be an idiot.
Alana said, so matter-of-fact it was like she didn't have time to notice his illogical nervousness.
Flex it for me.
She made him turn his chair, bend and unbend his bad leg. It didn't hurt. He'd been up and about in the morning, wandering through the horse yards, around the perimeter of the grounds, barely even stiff. Not satisfied with this demonstration, she had him up and about, walking back and forth across his floor.
Huh?
Alana said, eyebrows up. He was back in the chair, his foot propped on another while she bent over him, her hands resting just above the knee, a bright spot of heat through the cloth.
What does that mean?
He gave her a half smile, one eyebrow raised, putting on the face of the good-natured.
It's not as bad as I thought. Have you been avoiding the practice yard?
Not when I have the time to spare.
No one has time these days, apparently.
Alana said wryly. She added seriously.
Make the effort, and see myself or Duke Bairn afterwards. There's no need to let your body think it's finished healing. Hasn't Bairn told you this?
The injury is old now.
There are ways around that.
She reached for the book, leaning over his outstretched leg. Open, the thing dominated his writing desk. The pages turned with a flare of color. Hand-painted illustrations and careful script. The pictures were anatomical. Grotesque. It had to be worth a small fortune.
Medical text?
No.
Alana said absently. She found a two-page spread of a human leg, trapped forever in ink, mid-dissection.
It's a book on magical forms of torture.
Raoul stared at her. She let it slam shut.
We don't need it, thank the goddess. If I had to, I would cause hurt to heal hurt.
She sat heavily, but with a relief, like a weight had been lifted. Terrifying to imagine what that weight might have been if it scared Alana.
It's not a good way to do it. Unreliable and difficult. The power involved is ridiculous, and the pain would be exquisite. And then, at the end of that, we would both be yelled at very loudly. And technically I could worry about keeping my knife. But if your leg fails you, if you can't find your strength again, know that I will make you whole.
The magnitude of her offer, with that book of blood and bone lying silently across his papers, struck him dumb. He reached for her over his outstretched leg, his fingers folded around her wrists easily, thumb to first knuckle.
Alana!
But he had no words, could only bend his head, overcome with a sudden warmth and gratitude.
Linus, what a kingdom this must be to deserve you.
He said, finally. Alana had never had John's knack for heroic dignity. She turned bright red and threw her arms around him. Raoul gripped back tightly. Jonathan received a clipped, coded message from Tirigan on Monday evening, delivered to the king's spymaster and then from Miles to Jonathan. The information was so minimal as to seem unfinished. Translated, it said,
"Trouble. Governor H. sympathetic to rebellion. Captain K. dead. Reports falsified."
Wrapped around it, they found a second note in a more common cipher, written hastily. This one said,
"Cordon's regiment is dead, dispersed, or imprisoned. We are under siege at Castle Tyr. Estimate 150 enemy troops, infantry, 30 knights, 1 mage, master class. Send support immediately."
The first note, worrisomely incomplete, was in George's handwriting. The second, more recent, and a plea for aid, was clearly not. Alana said, white-faced,
"I'm leaving as soon as possible."
"I can spare 25 knights from Chorus. Lord Palim?"
John turned to the man across the table with broad shoulders and round face, his senior by more than 2 decades.
"When can you leave?"
3 days to prepare, your majesty,"
Palim said gruffly.
"And that's pushing it."
"You'll have to get the rest from Whitehorn as you go. Any infantry as well. I'll send messenger birds to Tornhelm, to have Lord Jake send his knights to you at Whitehorn."
"Gods, the waiting wrangles!"
Raoul burst out. He looked to Alana, expecting agreement, but she didn't protest. For all her skin looked too tight and too pale, she nodded in acceptance.
"I will speak with you and your knights this afternoon, my lord,"
she said, and then, pushing back in her chair, she left. Raoul watched her go, the beginnings of suspicion stirring in his gut. He pretended he couldn't feel Jonathan watching him. He saw Alana again when she all but body-checked him in an alcove off the main hall. They were alone, his back against the wall, her elbow still pressed low against his ribs. Her left hand was low, arm straight. He half expected her to be holding a knife, but it was a piece of paper tightly rolled. He recognized it. She had picked it from the floor of his rooms days ago for no other reason than to keep her hands busy. Abruptly, he realized what it was, and he knew exactly what clues she would have found recorded in his steady hand.
"You want the Own to be ready for rapid deployment throughout the realm,"
Alana said with the same intensity only Jonathan could muster, but so lacking in guile it was like the hard edge of a sword against his throat.
"That's the plan?"
"That's the plan you proposed to Gary and to John."
Alana's eyes narrowed, and maybe there was guile there after all.
"But nobody really understands what you mean when you tell them you have to act."
Raoul waited. Something hot was rising in his gut. Something a little like hope, and the heady recognition of someone who knows your soul. Alana's patience faltered at his silence, her tone taking on an edge of desperation.
"You didn't wait for approval. These plans, they're already in place. Implemented."
"Jonathan might need to leave suddenly."
Raoul hedged. At Alana's continued stare, he admitted,
"But not with 150 troops. 50, maybe, second company."
Alana's grin was fierce, triumphant.
"He'll have me, and the army behind us by 2 days. 50 will do."
She paused, her expression flickering.
"The Own has a second company?"
"Well, if we leave today, I guess you'll have made that decision for me."
Against his will, his gaze drifted towards the center of the palace, to Jonathan's rooms, and he stopped. Alana slapped that paper against his chest, barely more than a swat. It struck to the core of him, to his aspirations, to the ambition he hadn't thought he had.
"What is this? Scribbles? I know the language of war. You've recorded supply and personnel plans for a military unit ready to act throughout the entire kingdom. Is this paper the end of it? A few daydreaming notes?"
He stared at her. The shadows dimmed her strange eyes until they were almost mundane. In his mind's eye, Jonathan's gaze was sharper than ever. How odd to find himself unable to strike the blow when he finally held the sword in his hand.
Lana, why do you push me? Is it for the good of the realm that my plans have to be realized now? You are afraid for the life of your lover.
Alana, always brave, met his eyes. Mundane? Never. She swallowed and said simply,
"Yes."
Raoul was cowed. The heat spread through his chest and down his fingers as he reached for the paper in her hand. He confessed, borrowing her honesty.
"This is not a few scribbled notes. This is what the own can be, what it should be."
"Will you bring the own to Tirigen then?"
Raoul took a breath. He spoke like a man breaking free of a fog.
"Yes."
The end.
Thank you for listening.